is all the perks we give to customers. Food is a big one. On lunches alone, we have spent half of our expense budget. I found one lunch receipt that cost more than 25 cases of Collahealth. 25! Isn't that crazy? Natalie was flustered, which I could tell by the way her long eyelashes fluttered. Her eyelashes are nearly twice as long as mine, and much darker in color. Also, she doesn't hide them behind glasses the way I do. She started babbling about how she could make that money back easily and that it's an investment. But it's not true. And I said as much. I have carefully collected data. I love numbers because numbers don't lie. And the numbers show that most of these lunches don't result in 25 sales or more. The stores usually agree to stock a small amount of the product to see if it sells. On average, they purchased one case, which is 16 bottles. So every lunch loses money for us. When I finished talking, Seth was stroking his chin. He's always clean-shaven at the beginning of the day, but by the afternoon, he always has some hair on his jaw. As he stroked his chin, he kept saying, "Interesting. Interesting." Natalie wasn't convinced, though. She started talking about how in the short term the sales might not justify the expense, but in the long term it does. Except that's just wrong. And I told her so. "Well," she said, "maybe once you've made a sale you'd be in a better position to weigh in." I don't understand what she meant by that. I had a good idea to save the company money. I could tell Seth thought so too. And anyway, how could I make a sale? I'm an accountant. So I suppose it wasn't a complete success. Natalie didn't seem to agree with me, but that was only because she hasn't looked at the numbers. I tried to show her later, but she waved me off. Seth told me he was going to think about it, though. I reminded him that he could save the company tens of thousands of dollars. "Of course, you're the first person I want to tell about what a great job I did. You're the only person who gets it. Even my parents didn't really care about any of my achievements. When I first moved out of their house, I would sometimes call to tell them about how things were going for me. But I don't do that much anymore. And then, of course, that heart attack took my father. And now that he's gone, my mother has become even more critical of everything I do. You think she was bad before? She's much worse now. For example, if I told her about the meeting, she would probably agree with Natalie. She would say that Natalie knows what she's talking about better than I do, so I should keep my mouth shut, because nobody wants to listen to me anyway. You're the only one who doesn't criticize me. When we were in high school, every day my mother would pick on me. Why did I wear clothes that looked like they belonged to an old lady? Why did I always cut my hair so short? But when I showed up to school and saw you, you always had something nice to say about me. For example, when I got that turtle charm for my backpack, you were the first person to notice it and tell me how much you liked it. You never asked me why I never smiled, because when we were together, I actually felt like smiling. I wish you would come to visit soon. I miss you. Usually I love being at home at night. I do live alone, but you know me. I appreciate quiet. There's nothing worse than too much noise. I live in a small, two-bedroom, one-bathroom, single-story house in a quiet neighborhood in Quincy. Remember how much my mother hated my room when we were kids? Yet another thing she loved to pick on. She hated my turtle figurines and turtle posters. She thought I should put up posters of boy bands like normal kids. But in my own house, I can do whatever I want. When you come here, I'll give you the grand tour. For the most part, my furnishings are simple. A sofa purchased at a discount furniture store. A coffee table. A television. I have two bookcases, one of which is filled with books, and the other is filled with turtles. Turtle figurines, stuffed turtles, you name it. The centerpiece is a large ceramic turtle I bought a couple of years ago that's about the size of a basketball. You don't have to worry about me being burglarized, because if I had an intruder in my house, I could clock him on the head with that turtle and do some serious damage. Also, I don't live entirely alone. I've got Junior. Well, her full name is Mia Jr. Yes, that's right. I named her after you. She's a Mississippi map turtle. Turtles make great pets, and you know I've always wanted one. Every night, I feed Junior a few of her turtle pellets. That makes up most of her diet, although sometimes I'll purchase some dried crickets to provide her with a little variety. 3 or 4 times a week, I'll add in some leafy greens. Junior isn't a big eater, but I want her to have a well-rounded diet. I can't wait for you to meet her. I think you two will really hit it off. Sincerely, Dawn Schiff. To Dawn Schiff. From Mia Hodge. Subject, greetings. I'm so proud of you for kicking butt at that meeting. George is excited for you, too. Don't let yourself get intimidated. You are way better than that. And don't worry, I'll be there to visit you before you know it. Let me check my calendar and get back to you about some potential dates. XXO, Mia. Chapter 13. Present Day. Natalie. When I get back to my cubicle, my phone is ringing. I'm not in the mood to talk to anybody, but I do have a job to do and maybe this will get my mind off everything going on. And when I recognize Carmen Selena's number, I know it won't be an unpleasant call. Making a sale today would give me a lift. Natalie, Carmen gushes when she hears my voice. I heard about what happened at your company, about that woman who went missing. Are you all right? I'm fine. I swallow a lump in my throat. It's just been a long day. I can't imagine. Do they have any idea what happened to her? Despite everything, I almost laugh. Leave it to Carmen to call in search of gossip. But she's not going to hear any of it from me. I'm afraid not. Oh my. Carmen lets out a long sigh. And I can almost imagine her toying with the many strings and beads that she always wears around her neck. I've never seen that woman wearing less than 5 necklaces at a time. I don't even work there, but the whole thing is making me stressed out. I can't even imagine how you must feel. You should take a few capsules of low stress, I tell her. That product works miracles for anxiety. We've got nothing but great feedback. You know what, honey? I think we're fresh out. Do you think you could bring by a case of it later today? I can read Carmen's mind. She's hoping to pump me for more information about Dawn's disappearance later today. Not that I expect to know anything more. Unfortunately, our stock is low at the moment, and low stress is always a big seller. I've personally sold more of it than anyone else at the company. It makes me feel good that I'm helping people reduce their stress. How many people get to say that they truly help others at their jobs? I'm afraid I'll have to put in an order, I tell Carmen regretfully. She's disappointed, and I'm worried she's going to tell me to forget about it. But then she surprises me by asking for 2 boxes. After we hang up, I enter the information into the computer. But just as I'm submitting the order, my attention is drawn to a commotion at the front of the office. I stand up, and over the edge of the cubicles, I can see Detective Santoro talking to Seth. They're shaking hands. I can't hear anything they're saying, which makes me uneasy, especially when Seth points in the direction of my cubicle. The detective waves to me. I wave back. Then he's coming right toward me. I smooth out my hair and tuck a loose strand behind my ear. There's no reason to be nervous. I didn't do anything wrong. I'm sure the detective is just going to ask the exact same questions as yesterday, and then he'll move on to somebody else. A few seconds later, Detective Santora is approaching my cubicle. He smiles at me, and I have to admit, his smile disarms me. He doesn't seem upset or suspicious of me, and it also brings out a hint of dimples on both his cheeks. The detective is sexy in a swarthy kind of way.
"Miss Farrell, right?" he says.
I nod. "Yes, Detective Santoro?" He beams at me.
"You got a good memory."
"You have to have a good memory if you work in sales." "It's true. Clients love it when you remember every detail they told you about their lives and their business. That's why I keep notes. Have you found out anything about Dawn?" The smile instantly vanishes from his face.
"I'm afraid not. We're doing our best to find your friend. I promise you that."
"I appreciate that.
Have you spoken to her mother? He nods grimly, but doesn't elaborate.
I'm hoping I could ask you a few more questions, Miss Farrell. I'm trying to gather as much information as I can to find her.
Of course. Anything I can do to help.
Well, that's great.
He jerks his head to the left.
Your boss said we could use the conference room. Do you mind?
It's not like I have a choice. So I follow the detective to the conference room, all the while pushing away the sick feeling in my stomach. Chapter 14.
Miss Farrell, how close were you with Miss Schiff?
Detective Santora's eyes are trained on me as he asks me the question. His eyes are really dark. So dark you can't tell the iris from the pupil. It somehow gives me the illusion that he can see into my soul. And if I were to lie, he would know it. Not very close, I admit.
No?
I shrug. She works in the cubicle next to mine. We talk sometimes and we're friendly, but I wouldn't say we're great friends.
Sure.
The detective nods like he gets that.
You can't be friends with everyone, right?
Yes, exactly.
But you did know where she lives.
I squirm in my conference chair. I drove her home once, so I remembered her address. As I said, I have a good memory.
And why'd you go over to her house again?
A muscle in my jaw twitches. I told you this. She didn't show up for work this morning, and I got that phone call.
Right. You said there was a phone call to Dawn's line at the office, and you heard her voice.
That's right. Did you trace the calls that came to her number yesterday morning?
I did,
he confirms.
And every single one of them was internal.
Internal?
They all came from this office building.
Santora looks unimpressed by this revelation, but it's enough to give me a sick feeling in the pit of my stomach. Dawn called here yesterday begging for help, and the call came from inside the office. Oh, God. For a moment, I'm too terrified to even speak. But Santora doesn't seem at all concerned. That's because he didn't hear the way Dawn's voice sounded.
So had you ever been to Miss Schiff's house before?
He asks. No, I just dropped her off that one time. I've never been inside. I wipe my sweaty palms on my skirt. Why are you asking me all this? Why is it important?
Well, Miss Farrell, I'm just trying to understand some of the things we found in Miss Schiff's house.
I don't follow. Detective Santora leans forward like he's about to tell me a secret.
So the thing is, we found your fingerprints on a knife at Miss Schiff's house.
I freeze. My fingerprints? How do you have my fingerprints?
They were on the business card you gave me.
I feel violated. I offered him that business card of my own free will, and he used it to get my fingerprints. But anyway, it's for nothing. The fingerprints are very easy to explain. I grabbed a knife from the kitchen because I was scared there was an intruder. Then when I saw the blood, I dropped it on the floor. I told this to one of the police officers.
Right, he nods. We already knew that, but we found your fingerprints on another knife, one that was still in the knife block.
For a moment, I'm speechless. My fingerprints were on two knives? But it does make sense. I did grab the first knife in the block. I think I checked a few of them to find one the right size. I did, didn't I? I must have. Because how else could my fingerprints be on a second knife?
Okay, that explains that.
One corner of his lips curls up in a lopsided smile.
But how'd you get your fingerprints on the wine glass sitting on the counter in the kitchen?
The question takes my breath away. My fingerprints were on the wine glass in the kitchen? How could that be? I remember seeing the wine glass on the counter, and then the broken one on the floor, but I don't remember touching them. I grabbed the knife, maybe even touched a few of the knife handles, but I never touched the wine glass. Did I? I don't remember doing it. But if they found my fingerprints on the glass, I must have. It's the only explanation. And now that I think of it, yes, I definitely must have touched the glass. I touched the glass when I was in the kitchen, I say. I moved it to the side. It looked like it might fall like the other one. I'm sorry, I didn't realize at the time it was a crime scene. Detective Santora leans back in his chair again, considering my explanation.
So, You never shared a glass of wine with Miss Schiff.
No. I lick my lips. Look, Dawn was a nice person, but we weren't good friends.
Why not?
She was strange. It's hard to explain it exactly, but she was just a very strange person. If you met her, you would know what I mean.
Yeah.
He seems to be considering this.
You know, it's interesting.
What's interesting?
The way you keep referring to Miss Schiff in the past tense.
My mouth falls open. He's looking at me intently, obviously trying to get a reaction out of me. I have an alibi for 2 nights ago, I remind him.
An alibi, he repeats.
I should never have used that word. It makes me sound guilty. Innocent people don't need alibis. I mean, I was with somebody.
Right. You were with your boyfriend. I remember.
Except I wasn't really with Caleb. I'm counting on him to come through for me. I think he will. At the time, it seemed ridiculous to make up an alibi, but now I'm glad I did.
So I got another question for you, Miss Farrell.
Santoro reaches into his jacket pocket, and I flinch, expecting him to pull out a pair of handcuffs. Of course, that's ridiculous. Why would he arrest me? Sure enough, he pulls out a photograph.
Could you take a look at this?
He slides the photo across the conference table. I pick it up and stare at the familiar image. It's the bookcase at Dawn's house, the one that was filled with turtle figurines. Just the sight of it sends a shiver down my spine.
Do you recognize this?
He asks me. I cringe. Yes, it was in Dawn's living room.
Notice anything strange about it?
He's got to be pulling my leg. Do I notice anything strange about a bookcase filled with statues of turtles? Is there anything not strange about it? The detective taps on the center of the photo.
Right there. There's something missing.
He's pointing at the gap I remember seeing in the bookcase when I was at Dawn's house. The bookcase was so full, but there was that empty space right in the middle. I had assumed it was a decorating choice. It was like that when I got there, I say. You think there was something there?
The pattern of dust made it look like something was removed recently.
I shake my head. I'm sorry, I can't help you.
You sure?
He levels his dark, dark eyes at me. My hands are sweaty again, even though I've wiped them on my skirt 2 times since I've been in here. I'm sure. He doesn't drop his eyes. He keeps staring at me like he's waiting for me to break and tell him everything. But I have told him everything.
One more thing, he says in a low, almost conspiratorial voice. We found an email Dawn sent to you 2 days ago, asking to meet about something important.
He pauses in a meaningful way.
What did she want to meet about?
I don't know. We never had a chance to talk.
No. You sure about that?
I never genuinely believed that Santoro truly thought I could be a suspect until this moment. But when my eyes finally meet his gaze, I realize he knows something. Something damning. I wish we had talked. I fight to keep my voice steady. Maybe it would have kept her alive. He doesn't have an answer for that. I keep my hands under the table because I don't want him to see how much they're shaking. I glance over at the door to the conference room. So, we done here?
Yes. The detective's eyes never leave mine. We're done. For now.
Chapter 15. 6 months earlier. To Seth Hoffman. From Dawn Schiff. Subject. My helpful suggestion idea.
To Seth. I was wondering if you've given more thought to implementing my suggestion about eliminating business lunches. Sincerely, Dawn Schiff.
To Seth Hoffman. From Dawn Schiff. Subject. Helpful suggestion idea follow-up.
To Seth. I previously was inquiring about the business expenses. I'm attaching a proposal that would show how limiting expenses would save our company a large amount of money. Natalie alone accounts for at least half the expense budget. Sincerely, Dawn Schiff.
To Seth Hoffman. From Dawn Schiff. Subject. Helpful suggestion idea second follow-up.
To Seth.
Did you receive my previously emailed proposal? Sincerely, Don Schiff. To Seth Hoffman, from Don Schiff. Subject, helpful suggestion idea, third follow-up. To Seth, did you receive my previous email about whether you received my previously emailed proposal? Sincerely, Don Schiff. To Don Schiff, from Seth Hoffman. Subject, re, helpful suggestion idea, third follow-up.
Yes, I got it. Decided to go in another direction.
To Mia Hodge, from Don Schiff. Subject, re-greetings. Dear Mia, so today I did something I probably shouldn't have. This morning, I knocked on the door to Seth's office. He was doing something on his computer, and when I showed up at his door, he didn't smile. I wasn't sure how to take that. A lot of time I have trouble reading facial expressions. Other people seem to know when another person is angry or sad or happy just based on their face. I have no idea how they do that. If somebody is smiling, I assume they're happy, but beyond that, I'm at a loss. You're the only person whose expression I can read. Well, and my mother, but that's an easy one because she's always annoyed with me. So I thought there was a chance Seth wasn't happy with me. I had sent him a few emails recently about my ideas to save the company money, and he only replied with one sentence, or not at all. So I figured it was better to speak with him face to face. Except then the first thing he said when I walked in was, "What is it now?" I don't know why he said that. It's not like I bother him a lot. I sat down in one of the wooden chairs in front of his desk. He was looking at me now, so I went forward and explained once again why it would be wise to implement my plan. While I spoke, he kept running his hand through his hair, which is thinning just a little bit at the top. Not too bad, though, for a man his age. He keeps a photo on his desk of his family, and every time I'm in his office, I look at it. It's Seth and a woman, his wife, I assume. His wife is about his age and sort of plain-looking with brown hair and a round face, but she seems like she might be a nice person. She seems like the kind of person we could have been friends with. When I finally finished talking, he shrugged. It was the same as his email responses. He didn't give me a reason, so I asked him why. Why can't we limit spending? Again, he didn't have a good answer. Why don't you let me worry about that, Dawn? That's what he said to me. So I said back, it's just a very poor managerial decision. Maybe I shouldn't have said that. Well, you always tell me to stand up for myself. For once I decided to do it. Seth didn't like me saying that. He wasn't smiling. In fact, he was definitely frowning. Good thing you're not the manager then, he finally said. It was the wrong thing to say. I shouldn't have told him that he made a bad decision. He did make a bad decision, but he did not want to hear that. Some people only want to be told that they're right. My legs felt a little wobbly as I walked out of Seth's office. I didn't need to scrutinize his expression to know that he was angry with me. And worse, he wasn't going to take my suggestion. I gave him advice that could save the company, and he just blew it off. For no reason. Anyway, that was when my day went from bad to worse. I decided to get a cup of coffee before returning to work. I don't like to waste a lot of time in the morning, but everybody else does it, so why not? There's a coffee machine in the break room, and there's a tub full of those little coffee pods. Seth probably wastes a fortune on those, but I'm sure he does not want to hear my advice on that. I selected a French roast and set it brewing in the coffee machine. I reached into the cupboard to grab my turtle mug, and then I got a big surprise. My mug was lying on the shelf above the sink, in 5 pieces. I almost cried when I saw it. I couldn't help myself. You bought me that mug. It's one of my prized possessions. I've brought it with me to every job I've ever had. I retrieved the pieces from the shelf. At first, I thought I could attempt to reassemble them, but it was too badly broken. In addition to the 5 pieces it had been shattered into, other shards were missing. The mug was unusable. That's when I noticed Natalie was standing at the entrance to the break room, watching me. I had partially reassembled my mug, but when I released it, it fell apart immediately. One of the pieces dropped to the floor and broke in 3. "Oh, no," Natalie cried. "Your mug, how awful." There was a lump in my throat, but I swallowed it down. I didn't want Natalie to see me crying over a broken cup. I didn't want her to think I was a loser who would cry over a mug. Even the raised part with the turtle was broken in half. "What a bummer," she sighed. "You know what I bet happened? I bet you left it on the edge of the shelf, and then when somebody was reaching for their own mug, it just tipped right off." That didn't sound right. I'm careful to never leave my mug close to the edge of the shelf for that very reason. In fact, I remember telling Natalie that when she was putting her mug back too close to the edge. I warned her that that sort of thing could happen. I told her she should try not to be so careless. But I suppose she was right. Obviously, my mug had fallen and broken, so somebody must have knocked it over. "Next time," she said, "you should try not to be so careless." With those words, she turned on her red high heels and walked out of the break room. I picked up the pieces of my mug and stashed them in my purse to take them home with me. I tried to put them back together tonight, but it just wasn't the same. I ended up having to throw them away. I know it's impossible, but is there any way you could let me know where you purchased the mug? I know it was years and years ago, but I feel lost without it. I'm counting on you. Sincerely, Dawn Schiff. To Dawn Schiff, from Mia Hodge. Subject, greetings. Oh no, that's awful. I'm going to find you another mug ASAP. My brother is visiting at the moment, though, and he's dragging me to every tourist attraction. Maybe he can help me look for another mug. He sends his love, by the way. I know you always had a bit of a crush on him. Wink, wink. XXO, Mia. To Mia Hodge, from Dawn Schiff. Subject, greetings. Dear Mia, I hardly remember your brother, and I assure you that I did not have any sort of romantic infatuation with him. But if you feel he would be of assistance in finding another turtle mug, feel free to take him with you. Sincerely, Dawn Schiff. Chapter 16. Natalie. I don't end up leaving work after all. I can't. It would be worse to sit at home, wondering what was going on here. Wondering what everybody was saying to that detective. I have a view of the conference room if I stand up inside my cubicle. It seems like Santoro is interviewing every single person who works at the company. I just had the honor of being first, and the only one whose fingerprints are all over Dawn's house. Seth was second. Like me, he didn't seem thrilled about the idea of being interviewed by the police. He spent a long time with them, definitely more than half an hour. I wonder if Santoro asked him about me. I don't know why Santora is so suspicious of me. I was just being a good co-worker, checking up on Dawn when I was worried about her. If I did something to her, I would have gotten far away from her house. How could he possibly suspect me? And what does he think she wanted to talk to me about? He can't possibly know about... Nope, I'm being paranoid. Usually I eat lunch with Kim, but I'm too anxious today. I just grab a bag of chips from the vending machine downstairs and eat it in my cubicle. I make a few sales calls to take my mind off of everything, but every 20 minutes or so, I stand up to see what's going on in the conference room. It's just after lunch when Caleb sits down with the detective. I didn't even know Caleb was going to be at the office today. He usually doesn't come in on Wednesdays. But there he is, sitting across from Detective Santoro. He looks nervous. His left leg keeps bouncing on the floor. Twice he scratches at his head until his hair sticks up. Caleb hardly knew Dawn, so it's unlikely the detective is spending a lot of time asking him about her. I have to assume the questions being fired at him are all about me. Yesterday, he agreed to tell the detective we were together all night last night. but he wasn't happy about it. If I'd known he would be interviewed today, I would have checked in with him again and made sure we were still on the same page. Caleb is too honest. I can imagine him cracking and telling the detective the truth. We were together last night, but not the whole night. I check my watch. How long has he been in there? For God's sake, what could they be talking about for so long? Finally, Caleb emerges from the conference room. As soon as he gets out, his eyes meet mine across the room. He doesn't look away, which I consider a good sign. I raise my eyebrows at him, and he comes over to me. I nearly yank him by the arm into my cubicle. What were you talking about all that time? I'm trying to sound casual, but my voice comes out screechy.
Actually, he says, he asked me a lot about you.
My legs wobble beneath me. I'd been worried about something like that, but I'd tried to convince myself I was just being paranoid. Apparently not.
Like what? I don't know, a bunch of questions.
Ugh, Caleb is such a guy. So aggravating.
Like what?
He shrugs.
Just if you and Dawn were friends, and if Dawn ever talked to me about you. It was strange.
Did he ask you about Monday night?
Yes.
My chest feels heavy. And what did you tell him?
I told him we were together the whole night.
I can't help myself. I throw my arms around his shoulders. Thank you.
Yeah, but he pulls away, his cheeks pink. I don't feel great about this, Nat.
It's a white lie. He drops his voice several notches.
How exactly is lying to the police about our whereabouts a white lie?
I grit my teeth. So what? You think I killed Dawn or something?
No, of course not.
Then he hesitates.
But when we said we were going to meet, you said you had to do something else that night, remember?
I stared at him blankly.
What? I remember you said that. When I said you should come over, you said there was something else you had to do that night. What was it?
My cheeks get so hot that I'm sure my face is bright red. I just had to drop off a couple of cases of Colahealth at the vitamin store.
Are you serious? You really think I had something to do with what happened to her? No, sorry, I just...
Look, you're just saving us both some grief. I mean, between the two of us, you're much more physically capable of hurting Dawn, and you're getting an alibi out of this too, so you're welcome.
Caleb takes a step back, his face dark. But I don't have a motive.
And I do?
He averts his eyes. Fine. Whatever. Anyway, it's done.
I've been going about this wrong. I'm starting to antagonize my boyfriend, who was already feeling ambivalent about this whole thing. I need to tone it down and make him remember what a great time we have together.
Listen.
I run a finger up the thin fabric of his dress shirt. Why don't you come over to my house again tonight? I'll cook you some dinner.
He looks down at his watch. I can't. I came here because Seth told me I needed to talk to the detective. But I've got to get out to Newton right now, and I'll be stuck there till late. This took a lot longer than I thought it would.
Oh, maybe tomorrow then?
Yeah, maybe.
He sounds distracted.
I'll text you, okay?
It's hard to hide my disappointment. It's hard not to notice that Caleb isn't looking at me anymore like he's lucky to be with me. He looks like he wants to take off. I'd really thought Caleb could be the one, somebody who might stick around for the long term. I thought I'd found a great guy. And now that great guy is slipping through my fingers. But before I can get too worked up over it, he grabs my shoulders and plants a kiss on my lips.
I've got to go, he says. I'll see you later, Nat.
I watch him walk away, his shoulder slumped. I still can't tell if I've blown it or not. Chapter 17. When I left the house this morning, I double and triple checked to make sure I locked my front door. And sure enough, it's still locked when I get home. The first thing I do when I walk in my front door is flick on all the lights. It's wicked dark outside. It feels like it's the middle of the night, when it's actually only like 5:30. I hate having roommates, but this week I've been feeling increasingly uncomfortable about living alone. After all, Dawn lived alone, and look what happened to her. Well, we don't actually know what happened to her, but nothing good. I found a bunch of blood on her floor and nobody can find her anywhere.
Whatever the outcome, it doesn't look good for Dawn. I still can't stop thinking about the way she sounded during that phone call. Help me. My phone rings inside my purse. I fumble for it. My fingers cross that it's Caleb, having changed his mind about dinner. Or maybe it's Kim. But instead, it's a blocked number. Just like when I got home yesterday. Months ago, I was getting a lot of calls like this. Blocked numbers, hanging up on me or hissing threats in my ears. Except the difference is that, back then, I knew who was responsible for the calls. And that person has no reason to bother me anymore. It seems even less likely to be related to Dawn's disappearance. It's probably just another one of those stupid spam calls. I shouldn't even answer it. But before I can stop myself, I swipe on the screen to take the call. Hello? It's the same as yesterday. No sales pitch. No strange foreign languages. Just silence. My fingertips squeeze the phone. Who is this? No response. After waiting another beat, I press the red button to end the call. I look around my empty house, which is so quiet, I can hear myself breathing. I kick off my red heels and walk over to the coffee table. I grab the remote and flip on the television. There. Now it's not so quiet. Except I have unwittingly tuned into the evening news. The top local story is about the disappearance of Dawn Schiff. The camera is panning in on her little yellow house. Then a shot of the four-story building where we work. Then it skips to a shot of Detective Santoro.
We have not yet located Dawn Schiff.
His dark eyes flash under the lights of the camera.
But we have identified a person of interest in her disappearance.
A person of interest? What does that mean? But he doesn't elaborate.
We feel confident that we'll be able to find out what happened to Miss Schiff.
Santoro continues. Am I the person of interest? Would I know if I were a person of interest? Do they tell you stuff like that? I grab the remote and change the channel. It's Wheel of Fortune. Somebody is buying a vowel. I pick up my phone from where I dropped it on the sofa next to me. I stare at the screen, which is black. The truth is, there's only one person I want to talk to right now. But I shouldn't. I really, really shouldn't. Then again, making stupid decisions is my specialty. Hey, could you come over? I send the text message before I can overthink it. It's a mistake. I know it's a mistake. But, well, I've already done it. Barely 30 seconds later, a text appears on my screen. When? How about now? I watch the three bubbles hovering on the screen. A few seconds later, the reply pops up. I'll be there in 15 minutes. Chapter 18. 5 months earlier. To Melinda Hoffman. From Seth Hoffman. Subject. Tonight.
I'll be home late tonight. Eat without me. I'll grab dinner for myself on the way home.
To Seth Hoffman. From Melinda Hoffman. Subject. Re. Tonight. Again? How late are we talking? I wouldn't mind eating on the late side. To Melinda Hoffman. From Seth Hoffman. Subject. Re. Tonight.
It's really busy here. Completely swamped. Probably won't be till after 10. Eat without me. Really sorry. We'll make it up to you.
To Seth Hoffman. From Melinda Hoffman. Subject. Re. Tonight. But promise you'll be home on time tomorrow, okay? To Melinda Hoffman. From Seth Hoffman. Subject. Re. Tonight.
I promise. Love you.
To Mia Hodge. From Dawn Schiff. Subject. Re. Greetings.
Dear Mia, I had the most terrifying experience this morning. When I got to my cubicle this morning at 8:45 a.m., there was already a woman standing in the middle of the small square space. She had on a black trench coat, and her stringy brown hair was pulled into a bun that had come partially unraveled. Natalie sometimes wears messy buns, but hers are stylishly messy. This woman just looks disheveled, like she slept in the street. The scariest thing was the glint in her eyes. I might not be skilled at reading facial expressions, but it was clear this woman was furious. She looked so frightening that I took a step back. She accosted me and started asking all these questions about whose cubicle it was, and it sounded like she was looking for Natalie. So I pointed her in the direction of Natalie's cubicle. Of course, it occurred to me right after that this woman might mean Natalie harm, and perhaps it was unwise to tell her where Natalie's cubicle was. But it was too late. The woman pushed past me, jostling my shoulder. I swiveled my head to watch her march into Natalie's small space, still unoccupied. The woman dug something out of her purse as I studied her facial features. She looked familiar. I had seen this woman somewhere before. I was sure of it. Finally, the woman retrieved a folded sheet of paper from her purse. After her hesitation, she placed the paper on Natalie's desk and dropped the turtle figurine on top of it so it wouldn't fly away. "Make sure Natalie gets that note," she instructed me. I nodded, afraid to refuse the woman. And just as she was marching off, I realized why she looked familiar. I recognized her from a photograph, the one on Seth's desk. She was Seth's wife. I looked around the office. Natalie was nowhere in sight. She rarely showed up before 9, so it would be a while before she came in and discovered the note from Seth's wife. I wondered what it said. "You know I am not the sort of person who usually snoops. I find it detestable, to be honest. But I thought it was important that I investigated what the note said. What if it said there was a bomb in the building? If I didn't look at that note, everyone might be killed. It would be irresponsible of me not to look at the note." I took one last peek around to make sure nobody was watching me. Then I slipped into Natalie's cubicle, right next to mine. I took the note out from under the turtle and carefully unfolded it. The note was written in red ink. Scribbled, really. The handwriting was messy, but large enough that it was easy to read what it said. "If you touch my husband again, I will kill you." I stood there for a moment, reading and rereading the message. "If you touch my husband again, I will kill you." The message was written by Seth's wife. That means her husband was Seth. So she was telling Natalie that if she touched Seth, she would kill her. No, actually, she said that if Natalie touched Seth again, she would kill her. I was still working it all out when I felt a searing gaze boring into me. I ripped my eyes away from the note. Natalie was standing at the entrance to her cubicle, her arms folded across her chest. I could tell by the way the corners of her lips were turning down that she was not happy with me. I was so embarrassed that she caught me. You know I don't usually snoop. But after something like that, well, I couldn't help myself. I started stammering out an apology, explaining my concerns about a possible bomb threat. But even to my own ears, it sounded incredibly inadequate. I should not have read the note. It was an inexcusable invasion of her privacy. Thankfully, Natalie didn't press the issue further. She plucked the note out of my hands, and I watched the way all the color drained from her face as she read those 10 words. "Shit," she muttered under her breath, which seemed like a very reasonable response given the circumstances. But at least her ire was directed at the other woman and not me. I figured this was a good opportunity to make up for my transgression, so I asked if there was anything I could do. "You can mind your own damn business from now on, okay?" was what she said. I told her I would, but she kept pressing me. She said I couldn't tell another soul about this, and that if I did, she would make sure I was sorry, really and truly sorry. I was so freaked out, I took a step back and bumped into her desk. My fingers knocked into the turtle figurine, and it went toppling to the ground. Much like my mug, it shattered into several pieces on the floor. Of course, then she yelled at me for how clumsy I was and said I should clean up the pieces of the figurine that I had so thoughtfully purchased as a gift, now destroyed beyond repair. To be fair, I was the one who knocked into it, so it was reasonable for me to clean it up. While I was cleaning, one of the shards sliced into my finger, but I ignored it, even when a drop of blood trickled out. I dumped the pieces of the turtle into her garbage pail. I offered to buy her another one, but she told me not to bother. I kept my promise to Natalie for the rest of the day. I didn't tell a soul about that note on her desk. Not that there was anyone I could tell. It wasn't like I had a friend that I shared gossip with. I would have had to go out of my way to tell anyone. But even though I kept my mouth shut, that didn't mean I didn't think about it. The whole day, I couldn't stop thinking about it. Natalie and Seth. Now that I know the truth, it makes so much sense. He's always smiling at her and talking about how great she is. And he always has his hand on her arm or shoulder. I thought he was just friendly, but he never touched me like that. Or anyone else. Just Natalie. And why wouldn't he like Natalie? She's beautiful and she's nice and she's smart and everybody likes her. No wonder he didn't like my idea about getting rid of lunches. Natalie has him wrapped around her finger. He can't say no to her. But after thinking about it all day, I don't feel too bad about the whole thing. I had been upset that Seth didn't like my idea, but it turns out his rejecting the idea had nothing to do with whether he liked it or not. And now Natalie and I share a secret. Maybe we can be friends after all. After all, there's nothing that binds two people like a shared secret. Sincerely, Dawn Schiff. Chapter 19. Natalie. The headlights appear in my front window. I glance outside just in time to see the silver Audi pulling up right behind my own car. I pull my compact out of my purse and do one last check. Not that it matters so much, but it's almost an instinct at this point. And then the doorbell rings. I dash over to the door in my stocking feet. I don't check the peephole or ask who it is. I know who it is. I open my lock in my deadbolt and throw open the door. Seth Hoffman, my boss, is standing on my doorstep. His shirt is even more wrinkled than it was this morning, and he's got a 5 o'clock shadow on his chin. He's always clean-shaven in the morning, but he grows hair fast. "Hey," he says. "Hey," I say. Now that we have dispensed with the small talk, Seth steps forward and grabs me, smashing his lips against mine. He kicks the door closed behind him, and a second later, we're ripping each other's clothes off. God, I really, really miss this. I'm crazy about Caleb, but I don't think anyone has ever driven me wild the way my married boss does. Even though I knew it was the dumbest thing I could do, I found myself falling for him hard. But I was the one who ended it, because I was pretty sure Melinda was going to slit my throat if it kept up. And also, I was becoming increasingly convinced he would never, ever leave her. I was wrong about that one. As Seth and I collapse together onto the sofa, his lips still on mine, I feel almost dizzy with excitement. This must be the way a drug addict feels when they get a snort of cocaine after being off of it for 4 long months. Seth pulls his lips away for a moment.
"So, what happened to Caleb, huh?"
"Still in the picture."
"Is he?"
"Yes, this is a one-off. Okay?" He doesn't even have to think about it. "Okay." Then he goes back to kissing me. I miss this so damn much. Over an hour later, we're both on the sofa together, our bodies still intertwined, naked and sweaty and happy. I really needed that. I didn't even realize how much. It wasn't cheating, exactly. Caleb and I haven't even slept together yet. You can't cheat on somebody if you're not sleeping with them. And anyway, this was a one-off with an old flame. It doesn't even count.
"Jesus," Seth murmurs into my hair. "You're unbelievable, Natalie."
"You're not so bad yourself," he laughs.
"It's you. You bring it out in me."
"Sure I do."
"It's true."
He lifts his head to look at me.
"That's why Melinda and I split up, you know, because of you."
"You didn't tell her that, did you?"
"No."
He says in a way that makes me not quite believe him. I don't like the idea of Melinda thinking it's my fault her marriage fell apart. When she found out about me and Seth,
She didn't take it well that her husband was sleeping with his employee, who also happened to be 15 years younger than she was. There were threatening calls and notes. The calls would rouse me from sleep at 2 in the morning. A female voice hissing in my ear that I was a husband-stealing whore. Even when I blocked her number, she'd find a way to call. Once I saw her tan Lexus parked across the street from my house late in the evening, and I almost had a heart attack. That's when I got the can of mace and started keeping it in my purse at all times. I considered a restraining order, but it turned out that breaking up with Seth ended the harassment almost instantly.
"I love you, Nat."
He squeezes my body close to his as he says the words.
"I don't think I even realized how much until you broke it off. I'm so crazy about you."
Your timing is kind of bad on that.
"I know," he sighs. "I screwed up. I wanted to do the right thing, but I didn't know what the right thing was. I haven't loved Melinda in years. Even before you came around, we were like two strangers living in the same house. Maybe it would have been different if we had kids, but she couldn't, and I don't know."
Seth told me about Melinda's heartbreaking infertility issues and how she never forgave him for refusing to adopt.
"Anyway," he says, "by the end, I could barely stand being around her, and that wasn't fair to either of us."
I pull away from him and prop myself up on my elbow. "You know I'm dating someone else now."
"I know."
"And you've been separated from Melinda for
2 weeks.
"Oh, God," I groan. "Seriously, Seth, I think it's better if we stay friends." His eyes shoot down to my naked breast and wags his eyebrows.
"Friends?"
"I told you this was a one-off." He slides his hand down my thigh as he grins at me.
"How about a two-off?"
I want to tell him no. I should definitely tell him no. I've got a boyfriend who I like a lot, and he is 2 weeks separated from his wife of 12 years. He is still married. There's so many reasons not to do this. But then again, he's already here, so why not? Chapter 20. 4 months earlier. To Natalie Farrell. From Kimberly Healy. Subject, DS.
"Do you think she's a virgin?"
To Kimberly Healy. From Natalie Farrell. Subject, DS.
OMG, obviously. Can you imagine that woman ever having sex?
To Natalie Farrell. From Kimberly Healy. Subject, DS.
You never know.
To Kimberly Healy, from Natalie Farrell, subject, DS. Literally, the only way Dawn has ever had sex is if she did it with a turtle. To Natalie Farrell, from Kimberly Healy, subject, DS.
OMG, you are hilarious. Can you just imagine?
To Kimberly Healy, from Natalie Farrell, subject, DS.
Totally. Can't you just picture her stroking that hard shell, talking about how big and green it is and how sexy the turtle is because it's like a sea turtle instead of a land turtle?
To Natalie Farrell, from Kimberly Healy, subject DS.
I dare you to ask if she's ever had sex.
To Kimberly Healy, from Natalie Farrell, subject DS.
With a turtle, or just in general?
To Natalie Farrell, from Kimberly Healy, subject DS.
R-O-F-L.
To Natalie Farrell, from Zelda Morris, subject, your terrible product.
Natalie, I'm writing to express my outrage with Vixt and your horrible products. I started taking Kala Health 2 months ago to get a boost to my energy level, and because you stated it would make my skin and hair shinier. Well, this was the start of a nightmare I wish I could wake up from. 3 weeks after starting my daily regimen of Kala Health, I woke up with the room spinning. I managed to make it to the bathroom, but I had to hold onto the wall. Additionally, my fingers and feet were tingling. I thought I had the flu, and I stupidly continued taking your product, hoping they would help me get over it faster. Unfortunately, the opposite happened. I became dizzy all the time to the point where I couldn't drive. My hands and feet tingled and burned, which kept me awake at night.
and a few days after the symptoms started, my hair started falling out of my scalp in large clumps. You gave me your card, so I called to tell you about my symptoms. You assured me not only was Kala Health not responsible for my symptoms, but it was likely a vitamin deficiency causing the problem, and I should double my dose. Stupidly, I listened to you. Over the next several weeks, my symptoms got progressively worse. I couldn't feel my feet anymore, and I started falling. I needed a cane just to walk around my living room. I've always had excellent vision, but now my eyes became blurry and I started seeing double. My doctor was initially baffled, but when I showed him a bottle of ingredients, he was horrified. He said your product is responsible for all my symptoms. I haven't taken it in nearly a month, and I'm still not better. My life is ruined because of Kala Health and the lies you told me about your product. I honestly don't know how you can sleep at night. Expect to hear from my lawyer. Sincerely, Zelda Morris. To Mia Hodge, from Don Schiff. Subject, re-greetings. Dear Mia, this morning, I did something I shouldn't have done. I answered Natalie's phone. This was not a decision I took lightly. Natalie was already in the office by then. I saw her waltz in around 9:15, but then shortly after she disappeared. At about 10 o'clock, her phone rang. Eventually, it went to voicemail, but then it rang again. And again. It was making it hard to focus on my work. I looked for her first. I really did. I got up, and I checked up and down the hallway. But when I couldn't find her, I had no choice. Just so there would be no confusion, I answered the phone. Natalie Farrell's desk. The woman on the other line started telling me the craziest story ever. She said that Natalie sold her a vitamin A cream, which was making her skin peel off. Peel off! She said her face was red and looked like it had been burned. Then she started sobbing that she looked like a zombie. She kept saying it over and over, I look like a zombie, I look like a zombie. It was terrible. She wanted to talk to Natalie right away, but I explained she wasn't available. I took down a message on one of a stack of post-it notes on Natalie's desk and scribbled down the woman's phone number, even though I suspect she'd already left half a dozen phone messages. The woman sobbed to me for a few more minutes about her zombie skin. Then I finally managed to get her off the phone. My hands were shaking after I hung up. You know how I hate dealing with intense situations like that. I'm not good at customer service. That's why I became an accountant. I took the sticky note with the woman's information on it and started looking for Natalie. I wasn't surprised when I found her in the break room with Kim, poring over the pages of a bridal magazine while sipping on a cup of coffee. I replaced my beloved turtle mug with a plain white one that I picked up at the drugstore. I wrote my name on the bottom in a permanent marker. Natalie looked up from the pages of the bridal magazine when she saw me. I wonder if Natalie ever uses that vitamin A cream, because her skin is so bright and glowing. She could easily get a job modeling for skincare products. Maybe that's why she's so good at selling them. Dawn, she said, I was hoping you would come by. In the time since I found out that Natalie was sleeping with Seth, she has not been very nice to me. It's odd, because you would think she would want to butter me up to ensure my silence. But she doesn't seem overly concerned that I'll divulge her secret, or else she knows that I'm going to keep my mouth shut either way. She was playing with one of her earrings, and that's when I noticed the way it sparkled. Diamonds. It had to be fake, though. They don't pay us that much here. Kim and I were wondering. Kim nudged her, and Natalie nudged her back. Are you a virgin, Dawn? Kim dissolved in giggles, but Natalie kept a straight face, even as I felt the skin on my cheek start to burn. The sad part is that this wasn't the first time someone has asked me that exact question. I mumbled something and the two of them kept giggling. Finally, Kim smacked Natalie on the arm and said, "Cut it out. You're so mean." Natalie just shrugged and said I didn't have to answer if I didn't want to. I know this is something you and I haven't talked about in a while. I didn't want to make you feel guilty for being so happy with George, and I genuinely think the two of you will spend the rest of your lives together. But I'm never, ever going to have that kind of relationship. The truth is, yes, I'm a virgin. I still haven't even ever had a boyfriend.
I've never even been on a date that wasn't sprung on me by my mother without my knowledge or consent. And none of those have led to second dates. The truth is, I haven't even kissed a boy. The closest I came was that game of spin the bottle in fifth grade at that horrible birthday party we went to at Jenny Horan's house. I'd been so surprised and pleased when Jenny invited us. You were the one who figured out it was because her mother had forced her to invite the entire class. You refused to participate when the group of kids in Jenny's basement gathered in a circle to play the game. I should have done the same. And then when Ned O'Keefe spun the bottle in my direction, I saw the look of disgust on his face. Before he could protest that he didn't want to kiss me, I ran away and hid in the closet for the rest of the party. I refused to come out, even when you knocked on the door and begged me. I stayed in the closet until my mother arrived to pick me up. Finally, Kim said to leave me alone and that I wasn't interested in stuff like that. I was desperate to change the subject by then, so I told Natalie about the phone message. I handed her the sticky note, and when she saw it, she rolled her eyes and crumbled it up. I tried to explain about the zombie skin, but Natalie just shook her head. "She's just overreacting," she told me. "This woman is crazy. The only people who use these products are nut jobs." I was surprised to hear her say that, because I assumed she must use the products herself. But when I asked her about her use of Vicks products, she and Kim burst out laughing simultaneously. I don't know what that meant exactly. I wasn't making a joke. Then Natalie got up and told Kim something about page 16 in the magazine and how the dress would be perfect for her. I thought